With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the show that celebrates WWE. It's Gorilla Position.
Hello, you, and welcome to Gorilla Position. Thank you very much for hitting the download button on this, your pro wrestling slash sports entertainment podcast of pleasure. My name's James D'Lo, your host and your guide through the wonderful world of WWE. It is Wednesday, 25th of November 2020, and this is episode 296 of the biggest and best WWE podcast in the UK. You know it off by heart by now. The only show of its kind to be supported, endorsed, and promoted by WWE themselves. That's right. We are the big leagues. I'm joking. We're not the big leagues. But we are the number one WWE podcast in the UK. So you can't argue with that. Welcome along. Thank you for hitting the download button. Thank you for all the support you always give GP. I thoroughly love our GP faithful. I don't know why. I just had a real rush of that just now. They've been with us through thick and thin, peaks and troughs, ups and downs over the last 6 years. What a journey it's been. Can't believe we're four off 300 episodes. Mental. Anyway, joining me on the show today to run through all the action from Monday Night Raw, he is a WWE lifer. He's a WWE obsessive in the best possible way. He is the fan in all of us. He's a Strictly Come Dancing champion, Mr. Kevin Clifton. You are my Kevs?
Yo, what up, Poos?
What up, Poos? How's your week going since we did our reaction show on Monday?
So Stacey's away at the moment filming, which meant I got a couple of nights to myself. So obviously, what did I do? Put on Monday Night Raw and just sat on the couch and watched the whole thing. And what I really enjoyed was watching it with no distractions, because sometimes you get in that zone of like, you'll be looking at your phone, there's social media, you'll be doing emails. Like, there's always, now because we've got these phones, it's like there's always something that we can be looking at on our phones. And you sort of miss bits and you don't enjoy it the same. And when you just put it down and watch it front to back without distraction, it's like you enjoy it so much more. So I thought, that's what I'm doing. I got like the quilt out on the sofa, cup of tea, and went, this is me for the next 3 hours.
Rock and roll. I love, you know, but the thing is, all the listeners will completely understand, you know, we're not ordinary men. When the girlfriends or the wives are away, we don't do real blokey things. We sit down and enjoy some good old fashioned wrestling. I love it.
Yeah, it's literally the first thing I think. It's like, all right, I'm going to be away for 2 nights. I just think, right, I can sit and watch wrestling. It's the first thought that comes into my head.
It's so true. Honestly, whenever Katie says she's gonna be going out and she's like, oh, did you mind if I go and see my friends? I'm like, love, leave now if you like. There's so much content I can watch on the network. I'm going to eat a kebab and watch WWE. Absolutely love it. There's nothing better. But it's a real valid point. And obviously this isn't sort of justifying bad creative or anything that we don't like on WWE, because there's an awful lot that isn't particularly good, as we all know, and we'll always be honest about that. But I do completely agree, when you don't have distractions and you can just sit back and enjoy it a bit, it doesn't feel like a chore to watch it, and it just, yeah, you get so much more enjoyment if you're concentrating on that and only that.
I want to ask you something as well, because me and Stace has been really making fun of me, right? And she says, because whenever you text me and go, right, are you free to record GP at this time? And you'll often say something like, might have to make it quite a quick one, just because I've got to do this and I've got to do that. Or it'll be like, let's rattle through it. Let's make it real snappy. Da, 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 da. And I say to Stace, oh yeah, we're recording Gorilla Position. She says, what time? I say, oh, 6 o'clock, whatever. I said, but don't worry, I'll only be like an hour max, because James has got other things to do. And she was saying, baby, he hasn't got other things to do. He tells you that because if he doesn't say that to you, you will literally talk about wrestling for 3 hours.
Listen,
the podcast can't be as long as that.
I am not going to lie. There is an element of truth to that. So Katie, who you know well, she often says, like, she'll say to me, what time are you doing GP? And I'm like, we're recording at 7, so I'll be done by, like, you know, 8, half 8 max. And she's like, yeah, see you at 10.
Yeah.
She's like, is Kev on? I'm like, yeah, Kev's doing it this week. Yeah, see you at 10. You have a reputation, Mr. Clifton.
And I'll say, no, he's just a busy man. He's got a whole production company that he runs. He's got like lots of things going on. And she's like, no, baby, I've used the same thing on other people. I say, like, I've it has to be a hard out at this time because of this meeting. What I mean is they will carry on talking if I don't say that to them.
Yeah.
When you texted me today, like, we'll just make it a quick one. I sent it to Stace and she was really laughing.
Excellent. That is so funny. Yeah, I mean, I remember in the early days, if we don't rattle through it, but I mean, the thing is, like, as much as you like to talk and as much as you like to talk about WWE specifically, it is one of those things. If you're a fan, you can just go and go, and you go off on a tangent or you start talking about a possible storyline, you start fantasy booking, that's the whole day gone.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
That is funny, though.
Like I say with Stace, like I'm not that, like, in a crowd of people, I'm not that talkative. Actually, I'm not like the most outgoing in a crowd of people. I'm sort of outgoing on stage, but not in like not socially. Mm. And apart from if it's like people that I really know, or we're talking about something I'm really interested in, then I won't shut up. And Stace always calls me out on it. And she goes, literally, when you're talking to James about wrestling, it's like you will not come up for air for 3-4 hours if no one stops you.
For 3-4 days.
Yeah.
I love it. I do love it. So with that in mind, you know, we spent 7 minutes talking about this.
Let's rattle through it, shall we?
Absolute state of it. Spending 7 minutes talking about how much we talk too much about it. right. Let's, before we get into Raw, because really, because of our reaction show, talking about Survivor Series, breaking all things down that happened on Sunday night, we've only really got Raw to cover. So, I mean, you know, we should be able to rattle through it this week. But let's play in the interview that we both did yesterday afternoon. We got on the line with old Trent Seven, who is in the final of the Heritage Cup, which is happening tomorrow night as we record this. He's against A-Kid. Did you enjoy talking to Trent? Because I know you've met him briefly at GP Live, but you didn't really know him very well. Were you impressed with Trent?
Oh, it was amazing. And this is what I mean. Like, I met him backstage at GP Live very, very briefly, and he was just stood there next to me. But because I'm can be like quite quiet in a crowd, and especially around wrestlers, because I get all starstruck, I sort of didn't know what to say to him or what to do. So I just sort of stood next to him all quiet. So the interview was like the first time I've actually properly spoken to him. I thought it was amazing. He really considered every answer. He was really interesting to chat to. It wasn't like sort of standard answers about everything. Yeah, he's so cool.
Okay, well, with that in mind, yeah, he's a very cool guy. So with that in mind, let's play this in. It's Trent talking about his career working in the BT Sports studio with no crowd, obviously, the Heritage Cup, all things NXT UK, the return of Tyler Bate, lots of ground covered. So let's roll it in right now. Here's me and Kev talking to Trent Seven, the big strong boy, yesterday. You are listening to Gorilla Position. Trent Seven, the one and only Trent Seven. How are you, sir?
Absolutely spot on. Very excited at the moment, to be honest.
Well, you should be.
Very excited.
You should be. You've got a lot going on. I mean, when I introduced you, I should have said Heritage Cup finalist Trent Seven. What a turn up for the books. You are in the final. It's very exciting. It must be a great feeling to know that you are such a huge part of the relaunch of NXT UK.
Absolutely. I've always had incredible pride with the way that we all carry ourselves as regards the NXT UK brand. And, you know, just getting the chance to even get back in the ring has been an absolute honour. But, like, there's nothing that's going to stop us from keeping working towards getting live fans back in that venue. So the sooner that happens, the better. But in the meantime, you can watch the final of the Heritage Cup featuring moi.
Well, it must feel great, because I guess the concept of the Heritage Cup has sort of spearheaded the campaign of the return of NXT UK. So are you feeling quite a lot of pressure being in this position, or are you used to it and you think, no, I deserve to be in this spot?
I suppose, I'm not going to lie. Of course, I think I deserve to be in this spot. I believe that the effort and the quality and the standard that which I performed to over the course of the last 4 years has led me to absolutely worthy of these spots. But I don't think it's necessarily being worthy that makes the difference. It's actually going out there and living up to the hype. And this is it. You know, we got through the first round. We got through the semi final. Now it's time to bring the big guns and get the job done.
And just, I know Kevin is desperate to ask a question, but I just want to talk to you about the sort of creative behind the Heritage Cup and the way the rounds work. It's got a lovely sort of old school feel to it. Have you enjoyed working this process, or is it more difficult putting together matches under these sort of restraints?
The one thing that got me first off was you've never, ever in your life realised how short 20 seconds is. It's like...
That is not a break, is it?
Oh, my God. It's so far away from being anything like a break. It's actually just more of a wind-up. I'd rather just carry on getting beaten up, to be really honest. Yeah, it's funny because, it just depends. It just depends how the round finishes. You know, if that round finishes pretty hectic, then that 20 seconds goes in a flash. Do you know what I mean? It's not like, you know, it's not like being able to kind of like just maneuver yourself away from your opponent and give yourself that natural time, you know, within a match to kind of breathe or get that breathing space after, you know, after taking something big. Or yeah, that 20 seconds goes down real fast. But it's something you get used to. And like I say, it's another style that we need to try ourselves at. And to be honest, it's been great fun. You know, I'd never done any of the rounds matches before. It wasn't something that I was trained in wrestling or that when I came up in wrestling, it was something that was very popular then. So to have the opportunity to do it is absolutely fantastic. But yeah, you know, two down, one to go.
What's it like performing in that studio at the moment? Obviously, there's no fans. I've seen that they've added like the screens in now as well, a bit like the Thunderdome.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know how much like you can hear, like what the sound is like in there for you, and what kind of atmosphere is in there. Like, does it make it more difficult?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's very, very strange because I suppose from a personal performance perspective, your job is to fight the guy across the ring from you anyway. So no matter what, you've got to concentrate on what your opponent's going to do and what you're going to do, etc. So it's almost like when the bell rings and you start going at it, you almost just forget where you were anyway. The one thing that I feel like I haven't got is that I feel like I haven't got, you know, in those moments of peril, I haven't got the crowd to reach out to and get a little bit of energy from. Mm. And that's where it kind of hits you. And you feel a little bit alone. You know what I mean? You feel a little bit secluded, a little bit more vulnerable than you normally would. You know, if someone's got a submission hold on me, I'm trying to, you know, I'm crawling my way to the rope or something, or I'm trying to break the submission. I can see the fans that are past that rope, and you know, they'll will you on, you know, and they'll give you that kind of, you know, that 12th man kind of feeling to you know, they become kind of like your tag team partner kind of thing. You know what I mean? So the first couple of times, you know, kind of, you know, you reach out there and you're looking for those fans and they're not there. It's kind of a little bit soul destroying. It really is. But, you know, we're professional performers and we just have to rise to the occasion. And it has been tough. It definitely has been. But, you know, roll on the time when fans can come back. And after current news, obviously yesterday, it looks like, you know, it's looking like it's definitely starting to snowball towards a much more positive 2021 as far as fan participation goes.
We're definitely heading in the right direction. And just on that, like you talk about the sort of the emotion of the crowd being there and carrying you through, but I'm always interested in the adrenaline side of having a crowd there versus not having a crowd there. And I remember thinking, I think maybe it was during the ladder match at WrestleMania, I was thinking, how are these performers doing these moves and, you know, sort of going through the pain of this match without the adrenaline of the crowd to carry them through? Is it a lot tougher from a sort of physical standpoint?
Speaking individually, and having been quite self-taught with the early parts of my wrestling career, I don't know how to put it in the nicest way, but we used to wrestle al fresco. I don't know if that's the right translation. or we would get the mattresses down in the living room and, you know, kind of self-teach yourself, but, you know, don't try this at home.
Yeah, obviously.
We made bad choices. However, there are those kind of moments that you do flash back to a little bit. You know, those times when you're on the trampoline or you're in the back garden and, you know, when you're a kid, there are those little throwbacks to those kind of moments where you're like, no one was there then and it was the pure will to do a flip or, you know, suplex your mate or whatever. You know, that was the kind of thing that got you through. And there's that kind of, there is that raw, like desire, that raw want to perform or want to even, you know, or want to wrestle that kind of does get you through it. Do you know what I mean? As well as obviously the, you know, there's a guy on the other side of the ring slapping and kicking seven shades out of you. So yeah, I think those two things combined, it's not as bad as it seems. It's just, you know, it's like you said, like not having the crowd on the other side of that railing is the one thing that I found the hardest to adjust to. But like I say, you claw back to those little moments when you're, you know, trying to do moonsaults on a trampoline and stuff like that. And you think, no one was there watching me then. And, you know, if no one's here watching me now, and I'm in the WWE and I can do anything. It's been a very, very bizarre last few months. But I just wanted to, you know, on that note, the work that has been put in between the staff at NXT UK and WWE and BT Sport has been second to none. It really has. That studio is absolutely incredible. And I, for one, just can't wait to see the day when there's fans in there, because it's going to be a real kind of like independent kind of vibe hotbed, but with the production quality of just world-class studio level. So very exciting times on the horizon, I think.
And talking about like being in the WWE, and I loved how you were talking about sort of being proud of NXT UK and sort of British wrestling. Is that sort of foremost in your mind, that sort of, is the aim for you to show what British wrestling can be and can do? Or is there also a part of you that, like, is the goal to one day get to, like, say, Raw and SmackDown or go over to America, like that kind of stuff? Like, do you have a desire to be over there, or is it more about, like, driving forward for British wrestling for you?
I suppose I can try and spin as many plates as I can, really, by focusing on, obviously, you know, making sure British wrestling is represented at the highest level. That may mean going to NXT in America. It may mean going to SmackDown. It may mean going to Raw. And obviously those kind of opportunities, you can't turn down. You know, I feel like if you're a professional wrestler, especially within the WWE, if your goal is not to be on WrestleMania at some point in your career, then, you know, I find it hard to relate to anyone who wouldn't want that, and very rarely do I meet those people. But so, like I say, on that kind of journey through there, you know, I suppose the one thing that I always keep in mind is we now look back 20, 30 years ago, and we look back at the people who kind of built the Heritage Cup and, you know, the incredible names that have come from British wrestling, you know, your David Boy Smiths, your William Regals, your Rollerball Rockos, your Johnny Saints, et cetera, et cetera. And the list goes on and on and on. But the thing that really is motivating me at the moment is that in 20, 30 years' time from now, who are the British legends going to be? Now, I need them to be me, and I want them to be Tom Tate, and I want them to be Pete Dunne. And do you know what I mean? Like, and obviously there's a plethora of other guys, but you know what I mean? You know, focusing on myself, which is, you know, at the moment, you know, I'm out there on my own at the minute. There's no Mustache Mountain right now, or no British Strong Style. That's something that's been a major driving force from, I think, my, you know, my journey through the Heritage Cup, is kind of not necessarily getting lost in the future, but just kind of focusing on the fact that, you know, when people look back on this in the history books, who was the first person to win the Heritage Cup? You know, you only get one chance to be the first time winner of the Heritage Cup. Who do they look back on, and who do people in 30, 40 years say, oh, who would be your Mount Rushmore of British professional wrestlers? You know, I want to be considered within that name. And to do that, you have to win things like the Heritage Cup, and you have to go to NXT in America, and you may have to go to Raw, and you may have to go to SmackDown, and do the things like, you know, like Drew McIntyre is doing. As far as that goes, like, I want to, I think a little bit further ahead now, as well as trying not to lose myself in the moment, that one day I need some, you know, 18, 19-year-old kid to turn around and try and scour through the network searching for Trent Seven matches.
I love the idea of in 2050, you, of course, will be such a legend by then, you'll return as like the GM of NXT UK. I love that idea.
Sow those seeds.
Absolutely.
Sounds good to me.
talking about that, this is sort of a good follow-on question. Your sort of character, I love the vignette that was on NXT UK a few weeks ago, and you were talking about yourself in a sort of, you know, like you were a veteran of the game now, and you were like the old dog of the pack when there are so many sort of younger talents coming through. Is that how you see yourself within this brand?
Not necessarily. I don't see myself necessarily like that as far as the brand goes, because there's always that part of it where I don't want to take anything away from someone who may have had a slightly longer career than I have. The one thing that I meant by that was necessarily the physical age that I'm at right now. You only get a certain amount of years in professional wrestling, as we've seen in probably the most incredible setup in the history of professional wrestling just, you know, the other day. You only get a certain amount of years to be at a level of performance that, you know, you can be competitive at. And that's kind of what I meant like that. You know, I think A-Kid is 22 years old, right? I think that's right. And I am years old, so... You know, there's an age gap. And I'd like to think that not necessarily my years in wrestling, but just my years on earth and, you know, my years, you know, working and doing the crazy jobs that I've done and doing the traveling that I'm doing will give me the edge in the final over the much younger A-Kid. That's what I meant by that, I suppose.
You're better looking though, so.
I am. I'm not going to lie.
You do look excellent today. Really good.
My skin is glowing. I don't know. I think it's these ring lights. They're pretty good.
Yeah, I knew you had a ring light on you.
Let's have a look without the ring light.
It's just gone pitch black. Hilarious.
I should have just disappeared.
Talking about you, like talking about stuff, doing promos, I'm always really interested in this. And you get people who are sort of better at talking, you know, better on the mic, better at doing promos than others. Some people aren't as confident with it. And we were talking about NXT a few weeks ago, And I was saying that sometimes people, when they're maybe newer to it or not as confident on the mic yet, there's a certain type of promo that, like, you've grown up listening to, like, a lot of Americans doing promos in wrestling, and there's a certain, like, intonation that they use. And sometimes people, I feel like, do an impression of an American wrestler. But you're someone who, like, when you're talking or when you're delivering any kind of promo, it always feels like you really mean what you're saying. It never feels like you're trying to do an impression of. And I'd be interested to hear about, like, was this a big development for you, or has it always come natural for you, or what is it about? Why does it work for you when you're talking?
The one thing that I've always thought, because it is, you're so right, because we've grown up and we've spent most of our childhoods and adult lives watching the absolute greatest performers of all time. The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Kurt Angle, like Triple H, all these guys were just the most unbelievable promo guys you've ever heard. And then the further back you go, you've got the Ric Flairs and the Macho Man Randy Savages. And they were just so incredibly compelling that it's hard for them to not have that, to not implant their kind of, you know, style or the way they deliver things. And we always say this, there's so many little words that you don't even think, you'd never use them in your everyday life whatsoever. But when the smoke clears and the dust settles and it's all said and done, like, why do we say these things? It's almost like we've been programmed. We've heard it so many times as fans of wrestling. It's like, right, it's my turn to do a promo. When it's all said and done, you just say it. You have to say it. It's because it's such a part of our lives as fans before we got to the stage that we're at. You just can't not say it. And there's so much dust settling and smoke clearing, and it's very funny sometimes because it's such an easy go to. But the one thing that I've always tried to do in respect to the way I feel like I come across, or people may perceive that I come across, is I just want to come across like I'm talking to you. So the one thing that the Midlands accent hasn't got is much inflection in its tone. It's a very dulcet tone. It's you don't find many many people from the West Midlands, specifically the Black Country, that have an incredible range of vocals and talk like this, and then get really. It just, I don't know, man. It's just not the way we were built. It's not the way our vocal cords are constructed. So there is just a little bit more of a monotone. So sometimes what you can do, what I feel I do is I can almost just, because I don't have that range of pitch, people kind of take a little bit of time to actually listen to what I say. So if I make it more of a conversation, it doesn't feel like they're having to listen to it. They just are hearing it. I don't know. Something.
Yeah. That's how it really works. Because the one I love is when you were talking about Mastiff, and you were talking about that, you sent a text message and all of that. And it literally, like, and you're like, but now I've learned everything I need to. And you know, now I'm better than you. And it just felt like, it doesn't even feel like you're trying to deliver a promo. It just felt like you're, like you say, like you're talking to us. That's what it felt like.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely how I wanted to be. I mean, there's guys in the country, like, especially the London guys. If you hear a Cockney guy do a promo, oh my God, it's the most entertaining thing I've ever heard in my life. they've got such an incredible range, like the Cockney accent. I don't know whether it's different, you know, colloquially. I don't know whether Cockneys think that Black Country people sound funny and they hear us differently to the way we hear ourselves. But yeah, Scousers, I mean, Zach Gibson is an incredible promo.
He is amazing.
He's just so entertaining. His voice, his accent is just, it's just second to none, isn't it? It's just perfect for the perfect. It just fits in perfectly.
The other sort of go-to phrase for wrestling promos that I always noticed and have done for sort of 30 years is whenever wrestlers are talking about fans, they'll always say each and every one of you. Yeah. Is that one that you and the boys talk about?
Oh God, yeah. The amount of times that you're doing a, you know, like, especially start with, you know, probably go, and you know, I just want to thank the millions of, oh, you can't say that. You can't, that's where you can't say that. Oh God. And then all you've got in your head then is the millions and millions of fans promo. And you're like, God. Yeah. So when I get out there, just bring it. Oh God, I can't say that either. And then you just kind of lost in the land of promos that you grew up listening to. So it does get tough, you know. You got to kind of, I think there's a big skill to promos, and the being in the shower, cutting promos on yourself in the shower or on your opponent in the shower, or after you get out of the shower and you're in the mirror and you're brushing your teeth, like that's a good way to practice. So for anyone, you know, up and coming, that's definitely what I've been told by some very wise people. So definitely use that time to start cutting promos. Normally on your missus or something like that, or a best mate who's let you down without coming, you know, on your birthday or something, or some one of your mates who decided not to meet you at the pub when you were going to and just left you hanging. Cut a promo on him. That'd be good.
Talking of your best mate, Tyler Bate, we haven't seen him for a long time. Can we expect him back anytime soon? What's the any sort of update on Mr. Bate?
Well, I hope, because I do miss him. And I'm pretty sure the rest of the WWE universe misses him as well. But yeah, you can't keep a big strong boy down. I'm sure he'll be back pretty soon.
Nice.
Hope so. Is there anyone else? I mean, obviously, I know you love working with Tyler. Is there anyone else who maybe you haven't worked with who you would love to work with here or in America? Like
here or America or on Strictly Come Dancing?
Let me think.
Well, I think we'd have good chemistry to do this. I could definitely see that being something that we could look at in the future. I mean, picture it now. We get to the final or whatever, and it's the Royal Rumba.
Oh, that is good.
The Royal Rumba.
Write that down immediately.
Someone will take it.
The Royal Rumba. Oh, unbelievable. The Summer Samba. Oh, it keeps coming.
I'm desperately trying to think of another one now.
I know. I'm like, come on.
Okay, no. Here you go. What was the question?
Who would you love to work with that you maybe haven't worked with yet?
As far as like the entire company wide, or are we kind of looking at the NXT brand? Because if it was the NXT brand, there's been so many golden opportunities that we've had over the past like couple of years. You know, I look back at things like even at the start of this year, the Worlds Collide with against Ciampa and Gargano. DIY, that was incredible opportunity to get in there with them. And then I believe that very soon after that on NXT TV over in America, I got the chance to wrestle Finn Balor one-on-one. So I feel as though, you know, I feel like there's some business left unsettled with the Undisputed Era, but it looks like they're a little bit busy with Pete Dunne right now. There's so many.
I'll tell you, in someone to work with, like, what is it about?
I honestly believe, mate, if you put a gun to my head, I'd say Randy Orton.
Hmm.
Randy Orton, I'd love it. I'd love a little bit of a feud with Randy Orton. I don't know if there's a more consistently like top performing wrestler over the course of the past 10 to 15 years. He really has just excelled, and you know, he doesn't try and shapeshift or anything like that. He is what he is, and Randy Orton is a legend. And a feud with Randy Orton would be very good, very interesting, and sign me up for that.
Awesome. We've got to wrap it up there, Trent, but so lovely to see you. Thank you for your time, and crucially, best of luck in the finals of the Heritage Cup Thursday night. Can't wait.
See you soon. Thank you very much indeed.
Cheers, Trent.
You're listening to the number one WWE podcast. It's Gorilla Position.
Welcome back to Gorilla Position, the show that takes you closer to the action and adventure of WWE. James D'Lo along with Mr. Kevin Clifton.
Yo, yo, yo.
And thank you very much to Trent Seven for being a part of this week's show. Check him out on BT Sport and the WWE Network tomorrow night, 8 p.m. He is in the final of the Heritage Cup along with A-Kid. It should be a cracking little match.
Yeah, I can't wait. I really want Trent to win, only because I don't know A-Kid as well. You know, I'm not as familiar. I mean, he looks great. I'm not as familiar with him, but I really want Trent to win.
But I like what Trent was seven. He was like Trent was seven. Trent, I liked what Trent was saying. In that he was like, you know, if you want to get to legendary status, if you want to really make your mark on this industry and be someone that, you know, kids in 20 years time look back on and you know, enjoy their work back, you've got to win things like this. You know, you've got to make that mark. So I'm hoping for big things for Trent.
Yeah. It's like when we talk about old King of the Rings and stuff like that, isn't it? Yeah. You want to go down in the history books as the winners of these things. Yeah, why not?
Right, let's talk Monday Night Raw. Still not convinced about this Raw theme tune, by the way. Really not.
Well, see, I am starting to absolutely love it. I'm starting to get obsessive about it.
Oh, God, here we go.
I downloaded it listen to it on the phone. Yeah, and I've been like, I've got that, you know, where you can turn it on to look at the lyrics as the song's on, because like, especially with raps and that, I really like seeing the following the lyrics and seeing what they're rapping about. And it's an amazing rap, and it made me go and download like all of his albums, this NF, because I didn't know much about him before. And turns out he's an incredible rapper, and okay. He's becoming my new thing, and that song in particular is pretty much on a loop at the moment.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. It's not that I dislike the song, it's just I don't know if it feels big enough.
Right.
It's just, you know, I don't know if it feels big enough to be a Raw theme tune, but, you know, my feeling is it'll be changed to something different by the spring. That is my prediction, right. But we'll see. Talking of predictions, by the way, I put a tweet out earlier on asking for people's predictions for the two Royal Rumble matches in January, the men's match and the women's match. Who have they got? And so many people on the GP Twitter feed, give us a follow at WWGP if you don't follow us already. So many people said Big E and Bianca Belair, and I was genuinely so excited at all the love that people have for these two. What two great picks for the Royal Rumble matches?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this now since I saw your tweet.
And, who have you got?
I can't decide yet. When it comes to the women, I think Bianca's a great shout. You also, you know, you're obviously going to think of names like Charlotte, Ronda, Alexa. We don't know, probably not, but we don't know if Becky might be ready by then. Those are the names you're thinking of. I think Bianca would be a great shout just from the point of view of like, in the same way that sometimes it can just make someone win in the Royal Rumble. Like it's been incredible for Drew McIntyre. Like it's the sort of thing that could be really amazing for Bianca. Whereas perhaps a Charlotte or a Ronda Rousey or people like that don't need it so much. On the men's side, I would love it if it was Big E. And again, he's in that similar place, like we say about Bianca, like winning the Royal Rumble would be that sort of shove up the card for Big E. Something like that. It could be amazing.
I would love Big E to win the Rumble. I would absolutely love it. Becky, by the way, there's no way she's going to be ready.
Right.
I think they're having their baby at the end of this year. I'm sure it's December due.
Right, okay.
So she's not going to be in the Rumble, unless she runs down the aisle pushing a pram.
And I think on the men's side, I think that, yeah, there's Big E. You've got to think about people like Bray Wyatt, Sheamus, if they're going to draw that out, you know, the him and Drew McIntyre thing. Who was the other one? Someone said Brock Lesnar, you know, people like that. I think a lot depends on if it's going to end up being Roman and The Rock or not.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't, and if The Rock's not going to be involved, then I can see Jey Uso winning it. And Jey, you know, it could be a surprise win. Yeah. And Roman could be proud of him in the way that, you know, Jey is so aligned with Roman now and expect that he's going to go after the other title. And then he turns on Roman to go after that title and finally beats him at Mania. Like it would be an amazing story. So, yeah, I think that a lot depends on quite a few factors, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a long way off still in this fast-moving world of WWE, and I'm sure they're not even sure who's going to win. But I just thought it'd be interesting to gauge what people are thinking a couple of months out. But, yeah, certainly a lot of love for Big E and Bianca Belair.
What if it was Bianca and Montez Ford?
Yeah, I mean, that would be cool. I wouldn't...
Big E's probably ahead of him, though, in that case.
I think so. I mean, as much as I love Montez Ford, and we talked a lot about him on the Survivor Series reaction show and those comparisons they were making between him and Kofi, I think his time is a good couple of years off.
Yeah.
If he's going to, you know, if he's going to reach that main event level.
Yeah.
Right. Let's talk about Raw. I thought this was quite a good show. Sort of simple, back to basics. It kicked off with the Raw winning team from Survivor Series. They were all stating their case to have a title opportunity against Drew. At least this is a reward for, well, one member of the team for being triumphant at Survivor Series. But
yeah.
But set this up before the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it automatically gives the team members valid reasons to be wary of each other going in, because just one member of the team could get a shot at the title. It means all five members of the team can have interactions with whoever the champ is building up to the pay-per-view. It just makes it more so, it makes it so much more palatable and believable than the brand supremacy nonsense. I think it's great that they've done it, but do it in the build-up to Survivor Series.
Yeah, you're right, actually. I didn't think of it like that, but yeah, that would have been, yeah, it would have put importance on Survivor Series on these matches. But when, As an overview, though, like of Raw and with this story, I feel like it was sort of, it's almost like Raw went back to basics in a sort of NXT way. You know, we always talk about NXT being like simple storytelling, like Wrestling 101 storytelling, and it just always works. I feel like this is what they did with Raw this week. There was, you know, they've done away with Underground. Retribution weren't there. I can't remember if there were, I don't think there was any 24/7 title stuff. Like, it was just like all of the sort of that sort of stuff that I feel is a bit silly wasn't there. And they were just focused on, right, we all want to go after the WWE Championship, and we're going to set up some matches, and they're going to go into a triple threat match. Like, the winners of these go into a triple threat match to determine the number one contender for the WWE title. And immediately you go, yeah, great. Of course, everyone wants the WWE title. And I thought it was, and yet we had a tag title match, you know, like it was very like a sort of basic wrestling 101 show. And I think all the better for it, really.
Yeah, I agree. I liked that it was three singles matches and then we get a triple threat next week. It was just, it sort of prolonged it and made it interesting. And it just, yeah, I was sort of bought in because I thought it just, well, crucially, it made sense.
Yeah.
It was just simple and it made sense. And it was the winning team of Survivor Series getting their payday, if you like, you know, getting their reward. And I just think, set it up before, make it, you know, if we were going into Survivor Series with that sort of on the line, then it would make us excited to tune in the following night. It would just become a much longer narrative arc, and I just think it would really help things. So they all state their case. There was a bit of name calling and Fireface and Dopey and all this nonsense. Braun Strowman seemingly fuming that he was asked last but not least by Adam Pearce to state his case for a title shot. He goes mad at Pearce, yells at him and then headbutts him. So this was a bit of a turn up for the books. It felt like they were doing something with Strowman. You know, for the first time in a long time, it feels like they were sort of building blocks of a storyline for Strowman here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I sort of don't mind this. I like, you know, it's nice that we're getting back to having that authority figure. Adam Pearce is very much the authority figure now, and he's put his hands on the authority figure, and therefore, you know, they've suspended him and all of that. Like, that's good. I mean, except for the fact that Randy put him up against a wall with his hands around his neck the week before and got... yeah. And within the title picture, you know, got a match to determine whether he's going to be number one contender or not. So that, you know, that's sort of, they forgot about.
Inconsistencies.
Yeah, there's an inconsistency, but we'll see where this goes with Braun. And I like Adam Pearce being the William Regal of the show.
Well, I think he's good, and he's not too over the top. He's not overshadowing the other talents, which I think, you know, as soon as they wheel out a McMahon, that very often happens, and it becomes about whether it's Stephanie or Shane or, you know, Vince back in the day. But, you know, I'd sort of feel in that William Regal role, he's doing a great job. Backstage, he did pronounce Drew McIntyre Drew McInfart. Which, I mean, you know, it was a slip of the tongue. It was a mistake. Not going to slag him off for it, but it was very funny. And he's been on Twitter talking about it since, so quite amusing.
I was begging the girl that was interviewing him to laugh. Yeah. I was like, please laugh at this.
Yeah, he's just our world champion. Don't worry. So the first match of the night, we saw New Day put their titles on the line against Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin from Hurt Business. Now, this was, I think something went awry in this match. There was a double count out quite early on, and I think it was an accident because it took everyone a long time to start the match again. Like, MVP had to jump on the mic and start saying, "You don't want it to end this way, do you? We're challenging you. Let this match continue." And then there was lots of talk between the ring announcer and the ref, and it wasn't done in that sort of theatrical way WWE do it when they, you know, kind of build the crowd up to restarting a match. It was all just a bit clunky and awkward. So I think that was an accident where the ref, as he's trained to do, you know, he calls it like a shoot. You know, if it's a count out, he will count them out if they don't get back in the ring. If someone taps and they're not meant to, he's gonna call for the bell. You know, that's how they're trained. So so interesting. But the match got started again. It was a very good match. As we said last week, I think the chemistry between these four guys is brilliant. But New Day ended up retaining after the match continued. I was a bit shocked, actually, that they retained. I, for some reason, thought it was going to be the Hurt Business with all the gold.
So did I, yeah. Just because it sort of came out of nowhere. I thought it looked for all the world like, oh, they've decided to go with, you know, New Day and Street Profits as a big, entertaining, all babyface, high-flying showcase match at Survivor Series. But it felt like this match was happening. It's like, okay, but the intention is to put the belts on the Hurt Business. That's what I was expecting. But then maybe it was just a case of they want to keep New Day strong, and they've just lost to the Street Profits over on, you know, from SmackDown. So maybe they just thought, okay, we don't want them to look like chumps. We need to put them in a situation where they look strong again. Let's title match against Hurt Business and have them win, just so we re-establish them as the strong champions.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
But I wouldn't have minded the belts going on Hurt Business.
I really want that. You know, I really like the Hurt Business. And talking of Hurt Business, so backstage we get Adam Pearce. He says Braun has been escorted from the building. And then before he can announce who's going to face Drew, Bobby Lashley from the Hurt Business enters the frame to talk to him. And he was saying he's the only champion who won their match for Raw at Survivor Series. So he states his case for the title opportunity. And then later on backstage, later on in the show, Randy, who is obviously lost the championship to Drew the previous week, he enters backstage and he just looks at Adam Pearce, not looking happy. So then Pearce, a little later on, announces three singles matches, winners face off in a triple threat next week, and then the winner of that faces Drew McIntyre. Now, they didn't actually specify that this was going to be at TLC in December, but you got to imagine that is where the title match will happen. So the first match of the three singles matches, the bro beats the fella.
Yeah.
This was a match, wasn't it?
It's a great match.
It went four segments.
Yeah, like sort of came out of nowhere. Like you say, at the beginning of the night, there was the name calling of Fireface and Dopey, and I was going to say Firecrutch, and Sheamus was all, don't call me Fireface. And I was like, oh, no. But then they just went into a match, like a wrestling match, it was exceptional. And I think as well, I mean, Sheamus has always been brilliant. You know, he's a good performer and he's a good hand. But I thought Sheamus's storytelling in this match was really good. Like just the sort of subtle, like looks of frustration on his face, because in his head, he should be beating Riddle. Riddle's new to the main roster, and it was frustrating him that he couldn't put him away, but not in a sort of generic over-the-top heel wrestler way. It was he was getting more and more frustrated, but in a quite a subtle way. You could really see it. I thought he did a really good job of telling this story, and I just thought it was a brilliant match. Like I say, I was sat on my couch, no distractions, just enjoying some great wrestling between these two.
Yeah, it was a really good match. I mean, so much for my Sheamus versus Drew at TLC prediction. Sad times. I really wanted Sheamus to win, and that's because I've really enjoyed and I'm extremely intrigued by what him and Drew could do from a storyline perspective. So I was sad he didn't win for that reason. But also, I've got to say, as much as I love him in the ring and I loved him in NXT, and I do believe there's something quite special with Riddle, I sort of feel like he's being ruined on the main roster because they're just, it's classic WWE. Oh, that's funny. Let's run it into the ground, you know. And they're just playing too much on his bro shtick, and it's and now the fact that they're calling him Dopey, I just don't think Vince thinks much of him,
right?
And that's complete conjecture. Obviously, it's just my opinion, but I just think, I don't know, the more he's on the mic on Raw, the less of a sort of real character he's becoming. He's becoming more cartoon-like every week.
Yeah, I guess so, but I still quite like him, and this, I think this match in particular will have done a lot for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we just got to see some great wrestling, and he got the win. I'm into. I know what you mean, but I'm still into him at this point.
Is there any way he wins the triple threat next week and goes on to face Drew at TLC? Would they do that? Considering TLC is a bit of a B pay per view and is not one of the main shows, would they put Riddle in a world title match?
No way. It's Riddle, Keith Lee, and AJ, is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I really don't know. It could be. It could be. You can make a case for any of them three.
Yeah, which I guess is good.
Winning next week. Yeah, I've got no idea.
Okay, but very, very solid match. I mean, you know, purely about the in-ring stuff, really, really good match between Riddle and Sheamus.
I feel like maybe actually it would come a little too soon for him to be in, like having a WWE title match on a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I sort of feel like he should be going for the US title maybe and things like that first.
Yeah.
Keith Lee, you can sort of believe it. You know what I mean? Keith Lee's different and AJ's AJ.
So and, maybe
and,
be Keith, a
bit soon. And Keith Lee's beaten Randy Orton on pay-per-view. Yeah.
And Riddle's not going to win in that match, is he? Like,
no.
We know that Riddle isn't going to win the WWE title off of Drew at TLC. So I don't know what the point would be.
But then, you know, for just the idea of creating a really fun, great match, I don't know if you remember, but a Royal Rumble a few years ago, it was Finn Balor versus Brock Lesnar.
Right.
And it's like, you knew Finn wasn't going to win.
Yeah.
But it was a great match. Everyone was really excited about it. And everyone was just like, what if Finn could beat Brock? Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, very different story here.
Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. Firefly Funhouse.
Excellent.
Amazing. Bray and Alexa talking about how friends will always let you down. And they were like, they were doing the thumbs down to friendship. And we saw a new arrival, the Friendship Frog, who disagrees with Bray and Alexa. So evil Alexa then hammers it to death. And this was swiftly followed by a very funny tribute to him, yeah, with Alexa saying, "Friendship Frog was a fine amphibian until he croaked." And they did the classic, like, I can't remember how old they made him. They did, like, was it 1970 to 2020?
Yeah, 1980,
something.
I think it was, yeah.
But these episodes are just getting better and better.
No, forget that. I was going to make a point, but it's not accurate. I was going to try and connect it to The Undertaker, but it's a completely invalid point. And also, I was going to go, which is 30 years, but it's 40 years. So
brilliant. And even if it was 30 years,
he's still not coming back.
Would that connection? Oh yeah. By the way, don't think I didn't notice you in the WhatsApp group earlier on when we were talking about Rumble predictions. You were like, the American Badass?
they kept saying The Undertaker. We're saying goodbye to The Undertaker. They didn't say The American Badass.
It's true. I mean, you've got a point. You are reaching hugely, but you've got a point.
I've got to let it go, haven't I?
Oh, God, yeah. Firefly Funhouse, these episodes are getting so much better. And I wish I could articulate why Alexa is adding so much value to this, to The Fiend, to Bray Wyatt, to Firefly Funhouse. Everything her and Bray together as a unit are touching right now turns to gold. It is just so good.
Yeah.
And I can't quite put my finger on why it's so good.
You can't take your eyes off her, can you? Like, even when Bray's talking, like, she's so in the moment and committed to this. And she's just so sort of manic. Like, I don't know what's going on behind her eyes. Like she's brilliant at it. They both are. They're both amazing. I'm loving it.
I bet Bray is completely over the moon because, you know, we know he's a bit of a genius. We know he has this warped mind and an incredibly creative mind for this stuff. But he's been given a gift with Alexa, and mm-hmm. and she is playing her part to perfection. She's got that eeriness and that sexiness and it's just so, I keep using the same words every week, but it's so sort of intriguing and baffling and freakish, and, you know, it's just I just love it. I love, like someone said on Twitter, but James, where's it going? And quite often I'm guilty of saying, yeah, all right, it's all right, but where's the storyline going? With this, I don't really care because I truly believe they're doing something really special here. And at a time when The Undertaker is gone and The Undertaker is no more, I feel now we have his replacement. We really do.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's great. Like, do you think when it comes to like this funhouse that they did with the Friendship Frog, Who do you think it's Bray that comes up with that whole idea, or do you think there's a team of producers, or they all sit down together, or like, what do you reckon?
My feeling is it's a collaborative thing. He will definitely work with producers who maybe hone certain ideas, but this must come from Bray.
Mm.
I really, because nobody knows Bray better than Bray.
Mm.
he has been doing this for long enough. This isn't his first rodeo. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he needs to do to make a success of his career. And he had some bumpy starts when other people were too involved. And I think this now he's created something so unique and so unique to him as well. And that's the thing. And that's when talents really take that step up the ladder. And when they really make proper names for themselves, it's when it's them being themselves, because everyone's unique and no one knows you better than you. And so that's why I think he is completely leading this. And of course he's got a team around him to bring it to life, but I would be absolutely astonished if 99% of this wasn't from the mind of Mr. Wyatt.
Well, props to them, like to the team of producers, you know, props to WWE for going with it.
Allowing it. Yeah.
Shows how seriously they take him, because imagine, you know, just another wrestler coming up with them and saying, I've got this idea. It's like a kids program and we're going to do this whole package about the friendship frog and it dies and we'll give it like, a whole tribute. And do you know what I mean? Like, you'd be going, what are you talking about? But on paper, it sounds so ridiculous, but they obviously trust that this is something that he can make work, and they're on board with it. And it shows you how seriously they take him as a superstar.
Well, I compare this to what we're seeing with Roman on SmackDown, because I don't think it's a case of like him pitching in what happens this week on the Firefly Funhouse. I don't think there's a meeting with Vince where he goes, right, and then we're going to say this and we can talk about friendship and then we're going to have this frog and he dies. I think they have their little unit, their little team who put this together, and they just go away and they do it. And they come up with whatever they come up with, and they run it through the edit, and they make it the best it can be, and then it goes out. And then I think they probably evaluate afterwards and go, okay, yeah, really like that bit. What you did there was brilliant. Let's certainly do more of that. We want to bring the frog back next week because he's been, you know, on social, everyone was loving the friendship frog. I think it's a really organic, natural thing. And whether they have the end goal yet for The Fiend and Alexa, and whether they have a sort of big kind of main event feud sorted out, I'm not sure. But I just think it's working. They're running with it and they're trying to be as creative as possible. And that's exactly what's happening with Roman and Jay and the dynasty over on SmackDown. And and you can tell when things happen organically like this, and you have proper creative leaders putting it together, It just works. You're not trying to, and also it's playing to people's strengths, and it's playing on people's own personalities, exactly what Roman and Jay is doing and Paul Heyman. It's just getting those dynamics right. And once they're right, you can't go too far wrong.
Yeah. It's just, I love it. As soon as they're coming on screen, I love it. And yeah, you're right. Half the time, I'm not even sure what's going on or where it's going, but I still love it.
But it can't be underestimated how much Alexa has brought to this, because there were so many episodes of Firefly Funhouse that I watched where, and we go back to the distraction thing, where I would sort of be on my phone looking at other things, kind of rolling my eyes, because I was just thinking, like we talk about Randy and his list promos, it's just Bray saying a collection of words that ultimately don't have much substance. Whereas now there's something there, there's something tangible there, and it just all feels real. And I feel like I'm hooked on every word he's saying and on every single action she's doing. They're honestly, like, it's amazing. I've got goosebumps thinking about it.
Yeah.
Really, really good. Lana.
Yeah.
So Lana gets a match with Asuka for the title. And this was, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Lana's being interviewed backstage, and she talks about how one day she'd love an opportunity at Championship Gold. And then there's an interview later on in the broadcast where Asuka is interviewed, or Asuka runs into Lana or something. And Asuka's like, okay, I accept. You can have a title match tonight. And Lana's like, whoa, I didn't mean tonight, but oh God. And then they end up having a match. Is that sort of how it happened?
Yeah, basically. Asuka went like, I've heard you want a title match. Okay, let's do it tonight. Maybe one day you can be the women's champion.
So that's fine. You know, Soul Survivor, again, a reward. I mean, WWE should have just come out and said, you were Soul Survivor last night, so you get a title opportunity. Again, the whoever survives, whether it's a sole survivor or, you know, you're in a winning team, title opportunities should be rewarded, and that should be part of the package heading into the pay-per-view.
But also, there's the point of like the fact that Asuka came to her and said it just almost quite nonchalantly, like, yeah, great, you can, let's do it, sort of plays into the no one really takes Lana seriously thing.
Yes, yeah, I guess it does.
Yeah.
But would it have been even more effective if she's the sole survivor, she's now, you know, then the commentators could go, oh, well, best of luck to Lana tomorrow night, because now she's got a title shot against Asuka. Yeah. She's never going to, you know, she's going to get destroyed. You know, that maybe would have even, you know, built it up even nicer. Mm. But my biggest problem with this whole thing is that Nia and Shayna come out before the match starts. WWE has no female tag teams to challenge Nia and Shayna. They come out utterly fixated with what Lana's doing and being frustrated with Lana getting a title match. It just renders the tag titles utterly pointless.
Yeah, they're struggling with these women's tag titles, aren't they?
Honestly, they are worthless, and they should be scrapped, in my opinion. They've been pointless from the word go, really. Like, yeah. we got we had Bayley and Sasha with the gold, and it didn't really work. Well, it didn't work on their first title reign. And then obviously it was working really well when they were the golden role models. But other than that, and other than the big win for the Iconics at WrestleMania in New York, they're just dead titles to me.
Well, this is what we said before, isn't it? They've split the tag teams up. Like we had some women's tags, like Bayley and Sasha were the champions, but obviously they were heading to a breakup, but we all knew that anyway.
Yeah.
They split up the Iconics. Like Lana and Natalia had a thing for about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And then they've split them up. Like, there's only really the Riot Squad.
Yeah.
Who else is there? They've thrown together Peyton and Lacey, but they're not a tag team.
Ugh, it's just it's so frustrating.
Yeah, like that. Like who can you throw out there to be considered for the number one contenders for the women's tag titles? I can only think of Riot Squad right now.
Yeah, no, totally. It just annoyed me seeing them come back and they're just
Dana and Mandy.
Oh, Dana and Mandy. Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, would you call them championship material? Certainly not yet.
No.
I just remember seeing them come down and they're sort of yelling at Lana and so bothered about what she's doing. I'm like, do you even care about the belts around your waist?
Mm.
Like, that's what you should be on the show doing, defending those titles, but there's no one to defend them against.
No, exactly.
So anyway, the match Lana versus Asuka lasts about 30 seconds. Asuka ends up throwing water over Nia and Shayna, who are sat at the commentary table. They then beat up Asuka, and it's obviously a DQ finish. Lana then saves Asuka from going through the table. And then there's a challenge made for a tag team match between Nia and Shayna versus Lana and Asuka. During this one, or towards the end of this one, Nia goes to throw Lana through the table. This would be week 10, I believe. But then Lana actually fights out of it and dodges Nia as Nia runs towards her, and that sends Nia flying over the table. And then, meanwhile, Asuka gets a roll-up victory over Shayna. So that all... Was Lana put through a table afterwards? I can't remember.
I don't think she was, no.
She wasn't, was she?
No.
So the streak is over.
Yeah.
That infamous call by Michael Cole. The streak is over.
It's Brock and Taker all over again.
Yeah, slightly less emotional this one, but the streak is over. So this whole thing just shows how little Asuka has got going on. And I know we talked about it on Monday, but geez Louise, I was about to swear then. It's so frustrating when you think about how talented she is. And she's just walking around saying to Lana, "Oh, you want a title match? Yeah, cool." She's the raw women's champion. She should be a big focus of the show every single week, whether it's in a big match or a big segment or a big interview spot or something. But she's just a secondary thought right now.
And I feel like it should be, like, ask the same question. Who should be number one contender right now for Asuka's title? My gut instinct says Shayna Baszler, but she's sort of Nia's number two at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, for a pointless tag title.
I know. Don't even get me started on Shayna either.
Yeah, but the thing about, like, Lana in this match, though, is that I said this Survivor Series as well. Lana makes me care about what's going on. And she's good in this role of, like, it's almost uncomfortable watching her getting beaten up, like getting beaten up by Shayna and Nia, because she feels so helpless. Do you know what I mean? In the ring, and we've seen her getting bullied. So she at least makes me want her to get one over on them. Which is good. So, I don't know. Maybe they're going to build towards Lana and someone taking the tag titles off them. But then, like I say, it could have been Lana and Natalia, but that's split up now. So yeah. Maybe it'd be Lana and Asuka. But then again, you're losing the focus of the women's title.
I just feel there is a distinct lack of character and sort of backbone to the whole division, really, on Raw. Like, you know, you have some great talents. But think about when Sasha and Bayley were coming out over the summer. And I sent a tweet, like, I was watching them coming down the aisle, and they were cutting promos, and they were being aggressive and cocky and horrible. And I sent a tweet saying, they remind me of the Hollywood Blondes.
Yeah.
And that's Steve Austin and Brian Pillman. And that is what I feel is missing from, and I'm not saying they all need to adopt that sort of attitude, but I just feel like I don't know the characters of so many of the female performers on Raw.
Even with, like, Sasha, you can say Sasha and Bayley's been excellent for most of this year, but, like, there's that run a couple of years ago of Sasha and Charlotte, which was amazing. And I think we are missing Charlotte. I know I'm a big Charlotte mark, but I think we're missing Charlotte a bit. And then you can talk about Becky and Ronda, you know, like those kind of characters.
There is nothing like that on the show at the moment.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I fault WWE because it's as great as Charlotte is, as great as Becky is, as great as Ronda is. And Alexa Bliss, and I put this on Twitter the other day as well. Alexa Bliss is the most important female star in all of WWE right now.
I
really feel she is, because she's hitting her stride and she's adopting this character and it's layered and it's different and it's unique. Whereas all the other talents, like WWE, need to give these other talents the opportunities they have given Charlotte and Becky. And yeah, they took the ball and they ran with it. And, you know, Becky turned herself into the man and turned her career around and became, I mean, literally the face of the company. But other female performers could do that as well, I believe. If they were, and yes, it has to be both parties working on this. You know, you can't just say it's WWE's fault. They're not giving them any opportunities. The talents have got to be a part of that, and they've got to sort of walk in the building and think, nope, I deserve it. I'm going to go for it, and I'm going to push the boundaries, and I'm going to push back on creative. I'm going to do my bit in furthering my career. You know, it's definitely a sort of two-way thing. But I just, when I look at the division now, compared to where it was even a year ago, it's very, very bland.
I know I made the prediction about, like, what might happen at Survivor Series and whatever, and sort of turned out to be wrong, but I still wonder if it's not time for Rhea Ripley to just come over to Raw, just to spice it up a little bit. Or even if Io Shirai was to drop the title to Rhea and Io came up and we had Asuka and Io Shirai going into a big feud.
Yeah.
Something like that. It just might be a case of someone or a couple of them coming up from NXT just to spice things up. I don't know.
But I would just want to know that the likes of Io Shirai wouldn't just
become Shayna.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
you know, we had Kairi Sane on Raw, who was one of the best talents ever, and she ended up leaving. And I know she went back to Japan to be with her husband and all those things, but and she had, you know, glimmers of light and brilliant moments with Asuka, but she never went to that next level.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think a lot of work needs to be done, because I look at all these performers and some of them are great, but they're just not taking those extra strides.
Yeah.
Keith Lee gets a DQ victory over Bobby Lashley because MVP gets involved. So did MVP sort of inadvertently cost Bobby Lashley the match here?
Yeah.
It did, right?
Yeah.
Because MVP attacked Keith Lee.
Yeah.
But that cost Bobby the match. So I don't know if that's going to play into some dissension in Hurt Business, which would be a great shame. And we certainly don't want Bobby Lashley to be a single star on his own. He absolutely needs MVP by his side.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm overthinking that.
And, I certainly don't want Hurt Business splitting up anytime soon. Lashley had a load of blood coming out of his head in this match, at the end of this match. I don't know when he got cut open.
Oh, I didn't see that. Did he?
Yeah, had like a gash down his head. So I didn't quite see the moment when it happened.
But I
enjoyed this match. It was another, what we were saying at the beginning about it, you know, everyone just wants the WWE title and here they are fighting out to be number one contender. I love the fact that MVP made the point of Lashley was the only winner from Raw's side, in terms of the title matches. So therefore, he's the one that deserves it. I love how MVP just makes little things like that make sense in the storyline. And then, yeah, we got a good match between these two, actually, like two big boys going at each other. And I love the bit where he was going for the Hurt Lock, but couldn't quite get him in because, like, Keith Lee's so big and so powerful, just did that old school wrestling thing of slowly powering out of a submission move, you know, almost like Hulk Hogan, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love that bit. It's so wrestling 101, but I loved it. And I just, again, enjoyed the match and happy for Keith Lee.
Yeah. So Keith Lee, as we said earlier, he's the second participant named for the triple threat match, the number one contenders triple threat match happening next Monday. And then we go into a great video package on Alexa, the story of Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. Really nice pre-match promo this. And then a really nice, well, I guess you'd call it a pre-match promo as well, from Nikki Cross backstage in gorilla position. Some nice, a sort of nice, good, meaty, serious promo from Nikki, which I thought was great. And then she comes out to new music as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that. That was new music, wasn't it?
It was. So talk to me about this one.
I think she said, I'm going to beat the Fiend out of her.
Yeah, that was nice.
That was a nice line. Like, and that is the story, isn't it? It's like she can, and that's what happens when people deal with the Fiend, is like they're always a little bit changed.
Yeah.
And it's like they're them, but there's a piece of the Fiend left in them once they've been in a program with him, which ties into him having the pictures of him on his wall in the funhouse with the eyes crossed out. And it's like everyone that he's sort of had business with always is a bit different afterwards, just left with a bit of the Fiend in them. And she and Alexa, obviously, they're sort of doing that very literally, and she was like, I'm gonna beat the Fiend out of her because I know this is not her. And then I enjoyed this, she sort of did the Roman Reigns, didn't she, like where she was crying in the ring, like didn't realize who she was, and like Nikki was almost like she was banging Alexa's head against the floor going like, stop it, like get out of her, like trying to shake this sort of demon out of her, shake the Fiend out of it. And then she sort of had this moment of trying, like realizing almost like, what's happening? Who am I? What's going on? Like she'd woken up out of it. And then, but it turned out she was faking it and won, a bit like Roman did on Jay at Hell in a Cell. That crying moment of, I don't even realize who I am anymore.
Yeah. It was brilliant. It was like, she'd come to this realization or just suddenly it snapped And she was like, oh my God, what have I been doing? And then she got genuinely upset. I couldn't keep my eyes off it. I thought it was great. And then, as you say, she turned, the emotions change. She hits Nikki Cross with, what was it? It wasn't a Sister Abigail.
Sort of a version of, wasn't it?
It was a sort of, slightly different variation of it.
Yeah.
And then covers her, smiling and giggling. But as she's covering her, she's doing the thing where she places her fingers under her chin. So she's now got a new way of pinning people, and just her mannerisms and the way she's actually working in ring. Because the thing is, we've been seeing these vignettes, we've been seeing Firefly Funhouse. She came out last week and was sort of, you know, on the outside of the ring for Bray's match with who was it, The Miz, and she did that brilliant dive on Morrison over the barricade. But this is the first time we've seen her actually work a match, and she's just different, and it's brilliant.
She's so committed to it. Yeah. And this is what I love. It's like this whole development of this character, in that she's changed by The Fiend, and she's moving differently, and she's wrestling differently, and she's reacting to things differently in the ring. Like, there's moments where she was sort of getting beaten down, and then she started laughing about it, started laughing at Nikki and about the fact that she was getting beaten up. And it's just like, because there's those extra moments, like, you don't know what's going on with her or what she's going to do. So that's why you can't take your eyes off it. Like, 'cause it's not just two people trying to win a match. It's there's so much more going on with her. I can't say enough about it.
Yeah. It's really, really good. Really, really good. And then in the main event of the show, Randy Orton. So this is the final singles match to determine the final competitor in the triple threat next week, the winner facing Drew. Randy taking on AJ Styles. And The Fiend gets involved. He pops up from behind the barricade in where ordinarily the front row would be, and he just popped up when Randy was taking a breather leaning on the barricade, and then he popped up again when Randy was stood next to the turnbuckles. He appeared in the corner of shot and the lights flickered, and AJ taking advantage of the distraction hits the phenomenal forearm, I think, and then pins Randy. And then, so AJ advances to the triple threat match. And so, what did you think of this? And what do you think of the Randy Fiend feud? Does that excite you?
I think so. It's something new for Randy that takes him out of the title picture, because we don't need to see that anymore.
Yeah. And
they've got history with the fact that Randy burnt down his house,
compoundy place. Yeah.
Bray's place. So there's story there to play with, and I'm excited to see this. We'll see where it goes. It depends on what Randy we get, I suppose. Like we're talking about Bray or The Fiend, you know, we've been talking about him, and he's excellent in everything he does, and he's so watchable. And if we get the Randy that's been there for most of this year, this could be exceptional. If we get Randy going through the motions, then it might not last as long.
Well, this is the thing, and I think what we got last time, and I want to say it was 2017, might have even been 2016. No, maybe it was 2017. But we got Bray versus Randy, and it was very much Randy going through the motions. And I was, yes, it was 2017, because I was there for their match at WrestleMania.
Oh, was that with the bugs?
In Orlando, yeah, and the bugs being projected onto the ring cameras. Yeah. And it was just like, I went to get a hot dog when that match happened, because it was so uninteresting. There wasn't a good storyline there. It was Randy being boring Randy and not the genius Randy that we know he can be. It was just paint by numbers, same old, and it wasn't enjoyable. It just wasn't enjoyable in any way. But I think we're sort of only just scratching the surface of what we can get out of Randy. And I think he's been doing such phenomenal work with the likes of Edge. Obviously, he's top of the list this year. But I think, if we can get a committed Randy and some sort of, it was kind of personal issue between the two, not just you burn my house down, but something where Randy tries to unpick Bray and tries to talk about the Bray's real past and trying to make it in WWE. And you can still play on the fact that he's now deranged and he's completely lost the plot and he's in his own little world. But I just feel like if there was some sort of personal digs in there that added some layers to this, it could be amazing.
That's when he's at his best.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, when he's in that zone. And also, we, like you've just been saying, we do have the added spark of Alexa this time. So
yes,
maybe she's the spark that can also, you know, that it's not just Bray and Randy that can interact. We can get some interaction between Alexa and Randy that could be really interesting.
I wouldn't be surprised if Randy's wife got involved because she's lovely and she's a beautiful lady and she's all over social. She's done stuff on the WWE Network before. She's done like Table for Three episodes with other wives of wrestlers. She's just, she's very ingrained in the whole world. And and she's a fan. Like that's how they met. That's how Randy and his wife met because she was a massive fan and they fell in love and it's beautiful and they've got a great beautiful family and it's lovely. But I wonder if because we have started to get to know the real Randy and family man Randy over the last sort of year or so, I wonder if Alexa tries to befriend his wife and she starts popping up in their family home or, you know, I just, there's something a bit different they could do here, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be quite nice.
Yeah, it could be really interesting. And with AJ, is AJ sitting slightly babyface for you now?
I don't know anymore. I really don't know. I don't know about AJ. I don't know about Bobby Lashley.
Right.
Like just Bobby Lashley saying to Adam Pearce, I just wanted to let you know that I would never have touched you in the way that Braun Strowman did. I would never lay my hands on an official like that. I just, like, was that a subtle sort of babyface term for Bobby? And is he going to leave the Hurt? But there are so many performers where I don't really know. And kind of like in the women's division as well, just going back to them. Like, yes, Nia and Shayna, obvious heels. But there are so many tweeners at the moment where you just think, oh, I don't know if to root for you or if to hate you or, you know, it's all like, a bit unclear.
I was certainly rooting for AJ against Randy because you hate Randy because he's sort of a nasty heel, isn't he? And the whole him and Drew thing, like I was so behind Drew, you know, you want to not like Randy. So, and AJ I've found quite entertaining trying to be the captain of this team, just being a complete idiot.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about when he's like, why can't everyone just get along? Why? And all of that, you know, it's quite funny and just, it's just ridiculous. And it's sort of, we said slightly sort of Jericho-esque.
Mm.
I don't know. I'm just wondering if he's sort of babyface now. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think we'll see. I'm very interested to see if they go with AJ for a match with Drew.
Mm.
Because in the first run of Drew's title reign, we didn't get a match with AJ. And they could have an absolute barnstormer.
They could. And I suppose out of all of them in this picture right now, he's the only one that could be a heel. Drew, Keith Lee, and Riddle are all definitely baby faces.
Yeah, very true.
AJ's the only potential heel in there.
Yeah.
So maybe they will push him more as a heel and maybe he will win.
Mm. Okay, well, we shall see. But a fairly enjoyable Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, it was good. I liked it. I've enjoyed it. And it's interesting that, you know, there was no Retribution and no 24/7 and no Underground and all that. And
One correction. I think maybe you've blocked it out, but what? I think there was 24/7 title gumph on there.
You're kidding me?
No, I'm pretty sure there was.
Completely blocked it out then.
Isn't that funny? I'm sure there was. I'm sure. I mean, listen, I don't even know who the champion is. I don't know if it's R-Truth or Akira Tozawa or a turkey, but I'm sure. I'm sure Akira Tozawa won the title on Raw.
Maybe he did.
I don't have him in front of me. But, I mean, you know, that's, and we've discussed before, it's not for us, but it's so under the radar for us. We completely forgotten it even happened. Who's calling you?
Stace. Sorry.
We cut her off?
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Hang on one second. Baby, I'm just finishing the podcast. I'll call you in like a couple of minutes.
Bye, Stace.
Because James asked. Because James has to be somewhere.
Okay.
All right, baby.
Baby, don't go on too much.
Don't go on too much.
I can't shut him up.
I know. I'm sorry, James. I've had a word with him about this.
We've talked about it on the podcast. All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, that's hilarious. What a fantastic way to bookend the show. Absolutely perfect. We couldn't have scripted that. That was absolutely ideal.
Literally came to cut me off and tell me to stop talking about wrestling.
Yeah, it's perfect. Right. Well, thank you. I'm excited by TLC, you know. I think I'm I feel just relieved that Survivor Series is out of the way.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
No, it's all fun and games. And remember, Trent Seven, A-Kid, NXT UK Heritage Cup final happening this Thursday night on the WWE Network. Make sure you check it out. And thanks again to Trent for being part of this week's show. Kev, where can people find you on the soch?
At Kevy Clifton, K-E-V-I Clifton.
Good. And you can follow me at James D'Lo on Twitter and Instagram. But more importantly, follow the show at WWGP on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/GorillaPositionWWE. And if you want to subscribe to the newsletter, head to GorillaPositionWWE.com. Enter your name and your email address. It takes 10 seconds and it really helps us out. So please go do it. Right. Thank you, Kev. Hope you have a lovely evening. You're going for your Io Shirai sushi now, aren't you?
That's right. I think it's called Iro Sushi, but yeah, I call it Io Shirai.
Io Shirai. Well, enjoy it, mate, and I shall speak to you next week. Thank you so much, boys and girls, for listening. This has been Starstruck Media Production, and we shall see you next Wednesday.